From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. President Trump has claimed that his relentless desire for a massive $5.7 billion border wall is motivated by his concern for undocumented women and children, who he says are mired in a, quote, humanitarian crisis. His White House has claimed that human traffickers victimize countless women and children and that, quote, without a wall, our southern border is wide open to human trafficking. Of course, it was the Trump administration that oversaw the largest scale detention of families at the border and the separation of parents from their children. Thousands of children were traumatized last year when they were ripped away from their parents, and hundreds remain separated. There seems to be no real plan by the government on how best to reunite them with their families. About 10,000 unaccompanied minors are also in detention, and plans are underfoot to build more facilities to detain more children. My guest is Peter Shea. He is the president and executive director of the Center for Human Rights and Constitutional Law Foundation. He's also one of the lead attorneys representing detained children in the Flores case. Welcome to the program, Peter.
Thank you, Sonali.
So we've had you on before last year when the Flores case, the Flores settlement, was extremely pertinent when children were being separated from their parents. It remains pertinent today. Do you mind giving us a very quick lesson on what the Flores settlement was and whether it is still being observed and respected by the government?
Certainly. The Flores settlement is a historic settlement for immigrant children. It was reached after many years of litigation in 1997, and it's an agreement between us, the Center for Human Rights and Constitutional Law, and the federal government to resolve that litigation. And it's a long document, but in essence, it contains two foundational components. One is that children in federal custody, immigrant children in federal custody, must be treated humanely. And that starts with Border Patrol apprehension. If they are a family unit, a child with a parent, and they go into ICE custody, the obligation of humane treatment it obligates ICE with regards to those detention. And unaccompanied minors are generally within about 2 or 3 days transferred from the custody of the Border Patrol to the Office of Refugee Resettlement, which is part of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. And the settlement also controls the treatment by the Office of Refugee Resettlement of children in custody. And secondly, the settlement guarantees to all apprehended minors that from the time of their apprehension forward, the government, whichever one of those agencies might be detaining the children, has an obligation to make and to record continuous and ongoing efforts aimed at the prompt release of children. And the release is generally, there is a hierarchy and order of release. About 40% of these children have parents living in the United States. So the first order of release is to a parent. If a parent is not available, the settlement requires release to a relative, uncle, aunt, grandparent, etc. If a relative is not available, it requires release to an adult, an unrelated adult, who is designated by a parent. And there's a fourth option for release to a licensed group home, let's say in the area where a parent or relatives live. So that is the essence of the Flores Agreement. And right now, there is ongoing, and there has been for a couple years, ongoing litigation around the settlement. There's a judge in federal court in Los Angeles who oversees compliance with the settlement. And there's ongoing litigation on the part of the government seeking to terminate the settlement. The Trump administration is absolutely committed in any way possible, and President Trump has stated this over and over again publicly. They're absolutely committed to, they wish to terminate the settlement. Why? Because number one, they don't want to be bound by by judicial requirements that they treat children humanely. And number two, President Trump has repeatedly said that he believes these minors should be detained until their entire immigration case is completed, something that could take months or years.
And I understand that Trump is falsely claiming that the Flores settlement somehow prevents families from being held together.
Yes, he has. He's made that claim in an executive order. He's made that claim in recent negotiations with the House and the Senate about the government shutdown. President Trump, starting January the 4th of 2019, in the middle of the shutdown, he injected into the demands of the White House not only that Congress come up with a $5.7 billion for the wall, but that Congress also abrogate the Flores settlement. So he's put the Flores settlement right and the protection of children right into the crosshairs of his anti-immigrant campaign.
So we spoke with you last year during the controversy around the family separation. Eventually, the government was essentially forced to stop engaging in that practice. What is the status, as far as you know, of children who remain separated from their families that were separated at the border, and why they remain separated?
You know, this is an ongoing and very severe and heartbreaking problem. When the government decided, really it was former Attorney General Jeffrey Sessions, and in collaboration with the White House, decided to unveil their zero tolerance policy, which really involved separating children from their parents and then prosecuting the parents for misdemeanor entry into the United States without inspection. They incredibly, although perhaps it's not so incredible because this seems to be a pattern with this administration, but they had no strategic plan about how they would ultimately reunite children or even keep track of where a parent and where a child went subsequent to forcible separation. I spoke to one Border Patrol official who told me that in his particular Border Patrol sector, people, one or more of the officers, started to maintain just an Excel spreadsheet just because there was no plan to keep track of wow. where the kid was going. And they were told to stand down after a few days. They were told, no, don't keep track of this. It doesn't appear as if there was any system set up to keep track of where the parent went, keep track of where the child went, or to reunite the child with a parent prior to removal of the parent from the United States.
It almost sounds like it was purposefully a strategy of chaos.
You know, it only purposeful in the sense that there are so many different strategies going on right now, including with regards to immigrants, but other human rights issues, other issues where chaos seems to be once a decision is made to do X, then chaos follows in terms of how you do X or how you accomplish X or how you monitor your implementation of X. And this has certainly been one example. The result is right now, in addition to doing the Flores litigation, we also operate a homeless youth shelter in Los Angeles called Casa Libre, and it's a shelter for unaccompanied immigrant children. And we have a 16-year-old in the shelter now, who was separated from his mother about 2 years ago and hasn't seen his mother since that time, or a year and a half ago. It's important for folks to understand that the separation policy was unveiled about a year ago. But in fact, we have pretty clear evidence that it was initiated much earlier than that. And it was really initiated in 2017 as a trial project to separate children from their parents. So yeah, there are certainly hundreds and possibly thousands of children who may never see their parents again, because they're slowly, as they approach 17, they're slowly being integrated into the foster care system and are coming out of Office of Refugee custody.
Now, Peter, there are, as I mentioned, something on the order of 10,000 unaccompanied minors that remain detained. There was a tent facility in Tornillo, Texas, that became sort of, visually symbolic of that horrific practice. Although that was closed down, the detention remains, I understand, in different facilities around the country. But like the family separation, it seems as though there's no real single policy or standard by which to preserve and maintain the safety of these children, right?
Well, the problem is that as President Trump has repeatedly stated publicly that he does not think these children should be released, the unaccompanied minors, he does not think that they should be released. He thinks they should be detained. In fact, he is now proposing, as part of these budget discussions, these ongoing discussions in the past few weeks, he has now taken the position that he wants to see the budget restrict the ability of any Central American minor to even apply for asylum in the United States. He wants to wipe out the right of minors from Guatemala, El Salvador, or Honduras to even apply for asylum in the United States, even though that would very clearly violate federal law, because federal asylum law in the United States is based upon the United Nations protocol relating to the status of refugees, the 1967 protocol. That protocol, the United States is a party to. The Senate ratified it. The United States is absolutely bound by that protocol. That protocol gives the right, guarantees the right to all people, regardless of your age, to apply for political asylum in a country if you face persecution in your home country. United States law was rewritten to fully comply with the terms of the protocol. Now President Trump is proposing that that obligation just be wiped out for minors from those three countries, which would mean that if they are apprehended in the United States, regardless of how strong their asylum claim is, even if they convinced an asylum officer or a deportation officer or Border Patrol officer that there's 100% possibility that they would be executed or tortured or killed within a week of returning to their home countries, they would still have no right to apply for asylum.
And so he singled out three countries, which is very discriminatory.
That is correct. And so this is the current ploy, the current position of this administration. That would also, of course, wipe out any of the Flores rights, because Flores gives detained minors the right to humane treatment and the right to prompt release. But if minors under the Trump approach could just be apprehended and summarily deported, regardless of their eligibility for political asylum, or for that matter, regardless of their eligibility for any other basis upon which they could remain in the United States, and there are other grounds, a child might have a mother who has a green card who could petition for the child, or the child might have been abused, abandoned, or neglected, in which case the child actually qualifies under existing law for something called a special immigrant juvenile status visa. Regardless of what a child may qualify for, the Trump plan and his demand during the budget negotiations has been that Congress accept his position that Central American minors can simply be apprehended, immediately deported, regardless of whether they qualify for anything under federal law. That would, of course, also wipe out the Flores settlement, because you wouldn't have to treat children humanely in detention, because you wouldn't detain them, and you wouldn't have to release them promptly, because you'd simply be deporting them promptly. Wow. So that's kind of the current cutting issue that Congress and the White House are grappling with.
In the meantime, Peter, isn't it the right through the Flores settlement of your organization to inspect facilities where detained children are being held?
It is. Under the terms of the Flores settlement, we were concerned not only with extending certain fundamental human rights to immigrant children apprehended in the United States, but we were also concerned with compliance, and we were also concerned with how would this play out over several years. And so we included in the settlement agreement provisions that permit us to go into any facility, whoever it's run by, anywhere in the country, in order to monitor that facility, inspect that facility, and in order to interview our class members, which is all detained minors, being held in that facility. So we do conduct ongoing interviews with class members, inspections, and just in the past 6 months, we're just wrapping up having completed inspections of about 25 facilities and interviews with about 400 detained children, and these were all unaccompanied children. We collected about 400 declarations, sworn declarations from those children, and we are very shortly, probably within about a week, we plan to file a new motion in the federal court along with these 400 declarations, and we plan to challenge the extraordinary long delays in releasing minors to their parents or to their relatives, which is what has caused the number of children being detained to skyrocket. Just about 2 months ago, it was at 15,000. Right now, it's back down to 10,000. But those numbers are astronomical compared to where they were 2 or 3 years ago. And the reason for these high numbers is that this message from President Trump has made its way down to the frontline officers working for the Office of Refugee Resettlement, the other government agencies. They know their president doesn't want these children to be properly released. So they have instituted a variety of steps that significantly discourages parents and relatives from coming forward to collect their children. For example, they, as part of policy, these are not a rogue operation, as part of their policy, they actually advise parents who wish to collect their children. 80% of these parents and relatives are undocumented. They advise them, if you want to go through the process of getting your kid out of custody, we will turn you over to ICE for possible arrest and deportation as part of that process. Well, that obviously severely discourages people from coming forward. And even if they're not discouraged, they subject them to the kind of extreme vetting. You would think that they were part of the Osama bin Laden family or something. They really subject them to this extreme vetting, which extends what should be a 2 week process out to 3 months, 4 months. And that results in the skyrocketing population. And while they have closed down Torneo, they've simply moved most of those children to Homestead, Florida, which is another unlicensed facility in the nature of an army camp.
Wow. And we had actually spoken with an attorney with Southern Poverty Law Center who's representing, who's launching a class action lawsuit representing the 10,000 kids over specifically what you were just discussing, the using of the children as bait to deport their undocumented sponsors and parents. Let's talk a little bit, Peter, about these concerns that Trump and his supporters and his White House say they have about the safety and security of immigrant women and children. And Trump has tried to pivot from claiming that that all immigrants are violent criminals to saying that he cares about the safety and security of immigrant women and children because there's supposedly rampant human trafficking. How do you respond to that?
Well, I think, number one, that President Trump and his administration and his policies definitely play a role in creating the something of a humanitarian crisis at the border. And his failure to respond with rational, fair, cost-effective strategies also contribute to the problem. So I think I think it's fairly simple. First of all, if you wish to discourage people from migrants who fleeing violence, they're really fleeing for their safety, to come to the United States. The great majority of these folks not just coming here to visit Disneyland or for vacation or to work. They are actually facing conditions of extreme danger, which is what encourages them to take a dangerous journey, in fact, to get here. However, once they get up to the border, if you want to discourage that population from attempting to enter the United States without inspection, because that's not very safe, there are just certain obvious steps that you can take, and none of them involve building a wall. In fact, the wall idea is just ludicrous. I've interviewed possibly more undocumented people than anybody in the country, because we do massive class action cases that all involve tens or hundreds of thousands of immigrants, almost all undocumented, and we have to interview thousands of them. And very few people try to cross through the desert or the mountains these days when there's, you know, close to 100 million vehicles entering the United States every year from Mexico through various ports of entry, and all they get is a visual look by a Border Patrol agent for 2 seconds, and 199 out of 200 cars that just come in. It's far easier to enter the United States concealed in a vehicle than walking for a long distance up in the mountains, which is very unsafe. Having said that, though, there are certain obvious things that this administration could do and should do. One is to allocate far greater number of asylum officers and immigration judges to the ports of entry. So when people come up to the port of entry and make an asylum claim, that asylum claim can be adjudicated reasonably promptly. Secondly, you have to make that process a fair process. You cannot be sending messages, as is now happening, from the White House, from the Department of Justice, from Department of Homeland Security, to these hundreds of lower-ranking asylum officers and immigration judges. You cannot be giving them a consistent message that these people are all criminals or gang members or just coming up here seeking work. We don't really want these people. That does not result in a fair process. You need clear training. You need clear guidance. You need compliance with international law. You need compliance with U.S. law. And then you ought to adjudicate these applications fairly. And if you don't do that, word spreads within 2 minutes within the Caravanistas that this process is a fixed process. It's a witch hunt process. Your only hope is to enter without inspection. So they simply need more resources. They need a prompt process, and they need a fair process. Under President Obama, 85% of people who were interviewed at the border were found to have a credible fear or reasonable fear of persecution. That number has dropped. I don't know quite where it's dropped to. I think it's down to 35% now. So that's an ideological result-driven process. You need a fair process at the border with sufficient resources, and then you cannot be engaged in practices, as seems to be happening now, somehow in collaboration with the government of Mexico, to block U.S. lawyers from going down there to assist people to prepare their claims. I mean, that's outrageous. That's something we need to look at very quickly. We cannot have a situation where we're actually going to say to people, you know, wait here, wait in Mexico. We'll give you a prompt process. We'll give you a fair process, but we're going to block lawyers from coming down to consult, for you to consult with. That seems outrageous. That's something we've got to end right away.
Are you worried that there isn't enough media coverage of what's actually happening to kids and to immigrants? I mean, there's a lot of attention being paid to congressional negotiations to prevent a second shutdown. But I don't know, it feels like we're losing sight of the fact that there are still real living, breathing human beings that are very vulnerable who are suffering.
You know, that is a constant issue that we face. It's not just media coverage, but it's sort of public concern, public awareness. Once the media publicized President Trump's zero tolerance policy in about April of 2018. What caused the end to that policy was not so much us, the lawyers fighting in court or judges. It was really the public reaction to the separation policy. It was really the reaction of civil society. It was really the reaction of faith-based communities and so on that just created a groundswell of opposition. And that's what forced President Trump to back down. And he hasn't backed down on too many things. He backed down somewhat on immediate withdrawal of soldiers from Syria because of a public reaction. But he doesn't usually back down on things. And on this one was one time where he did back down. He hasn't done much to clean up the mess that he created and the drama that he created. But, you know, he basically stopped separating children. You know, once that policy ended, there's no question the public arousal at the detention of children kind of went down. And so one of our jobs, I think, is to keep the public informed and the public aware and members of Congress aware that there's a massive ongoing problem, and there's probably 10 to 15,000 children currently being detained with parents, and there's another 10,000, and it could easily jump to 15, back up to 15,000 next month, but there's another 10,000 unaccompanied children being detained, and these are not good conditions. You've had two children recently die. You've got several reports about sexual abuse and physical abuse in Border Patrol custody. You've got numerous reports of children sleeping on cold concrete floors for many nights in a row, no showers, no toiletries, no blankets, no change of clothing. The treatment of these children is not very good, and it's traumatizing to children to be detained in any event, thousands of miles from their parents or their relatives, and with no idea when, where, or how they will ever get out of custody. That is traumatizing to thousands of children right now.
Give out a website, Peter, where people can find out more about the work that you do.
Yes, I would suggest we do have a Facebook page. I think it's just Center for Human Rights, and one can go to the Facebook page. We also have a website, which is just centerforhumanrights.org. And finally, we do have a website where people can register, and they can either volunteer or donate or do both. And that website is called www.reunify.org. Reunify.org.
And we'll post a link to that from our website. Thank you so much, Peter, for all the work that you do and for joining us today.
And thank you so much for having me today. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Peter Shea is President and Executive Director of the Center for Human Rights and Constitutional Law Foundation. He's one of the lead attorneys representing detained children in the Flores case. We've been discussing the latest on immigrant children in the U.S. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.